So far, we've laid out our basic model.
More excitement than a human should be allowed to have.
And there seems to, in our discussion so far at least, the focus has been on an upward directionality to the discussion.
Right.
And I know in your work that you emphasize that we're both ascending and descending, or at least that the model has to include ascension and a descending component as well. So can you explain that?
Sure. If you look at the sort of general religious or spiritual orientation of human beings over, you know, several thousand year period, you can't help but be struck by two or maybe three at most sort of major religious or spiritual dispositions that men and women have had. Obviously, this is a very broad generalization, but still very interesting. One orientation finds salvation on earth. Another orientation finds final salvation in heaven. And the third orientation finds salvation in a union of the two. It's rather interesting. And obviously, again, many variations on this, and I'm going to use a few terms characterizing these three approaches, but I don't mean to pigeonhole them. So if I call the first approach paganism, for example, it doesn't mean all pagans are just that approach. Many of them are some of the others as well. But the first does tend to be associated with what we would call paganism, which is that a celebration of the body and life and earth vitality is basically what the spiritual life is all about. And in a sense, sin in that type of religion is anything that despoils or hurts life or hurts Gaia or hurts earth or hurts body or hurts fertility or hurts any sort of fecundity, basically. And it is true that these tended to be some of the earliest types of religions that we have, particularly in the archaic and magic eras. Again, doesn't mean that everything in those eras were archaic or magic. There were many profound shamanic visions of altered states that we talked about, gross, subtle, and causal states of consciousness. But the general orientation was the more you honor the earth, the more you find spiritual awareness. Starting right around what we call the Axial Period, which is really around 6th century BC, Greece in the West, but you find a similar orientation in the East as well. There's almost an entire reversal of orientation in terms of what constitutes the spiritual life or the realized life or the life that you have both the most freedom and the most fullness. And these tend to be almost entirely transcendental religions. So the first is immanent. It's this body, this life, this earth. And the second orientation is transcendental. It's a kingdom not of this earth, not in this body, not in this lifetime, not in your life. It's a very, very otherworldly orientation, just as the first orientation is very, very thisworldly. A lot of what we think of as the world's great traditions, the traditions that have come down to us most influential, tend to be of this ascending variety. Obviously, the monotheistic religions that we know, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, but a large part of the traditions around the world have a very strong ascending, otherworldly, heavenly kind of orientation. And in India, you find sort of the archetypal form of this merely ascending spirituality in the early forms of yoga and early Buddhism, which basically equates the entire manifest realm of Gaia and the senses and the body with what's called samsara, which basically means illusion or fragmentation or sourness. And realization is nirvana, the pure formless realm that is entirely otherworldly. There's no manifestation in nirvana at all. And indeed, nirvana is very similar to that deep dreamless state that we talked about, the formless state itself. And the whole goal of this life is to get out of this life, is to get off the round of rebirth, which means coming back to the earth. It's basically the earth is at best a runway, a takeoff for the real life that occurs in another realm, in a formless realm or in an actual heaven. And so the traditional ascending religions were not generally very friendly to the earth, not generally very friendly to the body, tend to be puritanical, tend to be repressive to some degrees. And since this is mostly during a period where men were mostly in the public sphere, and since men are trying in these religions to suppress their own sexuality, and since men blame women for being sexual objects, then women in these societies are viewed as basically sin, part of the sort of the world of sin, separation, suffering, mortality, and so on. Whether Eve gave him the apple and made him do it, or this variations on that tale you find all around the world. So they do tend to be rather patriarchal in a general sense, just as the previous pagan religions tend to be matriarchal or matrifocal, or at the very least, very, very friendly towards a great mother or a great goddess, whereas the ascending religions tend very much to be towards God the Father, God who's in heaven, or at the very least a formless ascending realm. One of the interesting things is for both the ascending and the descending religions is that each of them is the other's idea of sin, which is it's kind of interesting. For an ascender, for somebody who's going up, transcending, then any celebration of earth or body or sex or sexuality or sensuality is degenerate, is what keeps you attached to samsara. These are delusions, defilements. You have to transcend them, you have to overcome them. For the pagan, for somebody who is celebrating life, then the only real sin is repression, is denying earth or denying life or denying vitality. And so ascent to a descender is sort of the ultimate sin. It's the ultimate transgression, so to speak. And your salvation requires a return to earth, a resurrection of the body. Whereas that is exactly sin for an ascender, for somebody who wants to ascend. Now, at least historically, and there are many, many, many exceptions to this, but at least historically, starting right around the 2nd century AD, there is another kind of profound revolution in ways that men and women tended to look at spirituality. And this marks the third general type that we're talking about, which is often called the non-dual, sometimes called the tantric orientation. And for the non-dual traditions, full realization is to be found in an absolute embrace of earth and heaven, or emptiness and the entire realm of form, or descending and ascending currents. And the first really profound, well, there are many, many profound statements of this, but certainly one of the most significant in the East was a philosopher sage in the Buddhist tradition known as Nagarjuna, who founded basically responsible for the Mahayana school of Buddhism, which was the great school of Buddhism that arose out of earlier Theravadan Buddhism, and gave rise to such forms of Buddhism as Zen Buddhism eventually, and Tibetan Buddhism, and Vajrayana Buddhism, and so on. And the fundamental insight is that samsara and nirvana are not two, that which we call samsara is not different from nirvana, and that which we call nirvana is not different from samsara. It's more often stated that which is emptiness is not other than form, and that which is form is not other than emptiness. It's not just a theoretical position. It's an actual experience of awakening. And we talked a little bit about it when we talked about some of the pointing out instructions for the witness at an earlier time. If right now in your own awareness you notice that objects are arising, clouds are arising, floating by in your awareness, there are thoughts floating by in your awareness, there are sensations in your body floating by in your awareness, these are all objects to the witness that you are. And this witness itself, because it's aware of thoughts, is not itself thoughts. Because it's aware of feelings, it's not feelings. Because it's aware of clouds, it's not clouds. So the witness is empty. The witness is formless. The witness has no characteristics at all. But it's aware of this entire world of form that's arising. Now, one way to talk about these three dispositions, religious dispositions that we're discussing, is if you look at the world of form out there, whether it's body or nature or the clouds or sky or Gaia, that entire world of form, if you think that's the ultimate reality, then that's the pagan orientation, or that's the descending orientation, or that's the orientation that celebrates Earth. If, on the other hand, you think that this pure witness, this transcendental self that has no qualities at all, if you think that's the ultimate reality, then you're going to tend towards an ascender, because you want to identify now with consciousness. You don't want to identify with objects in consciousness. So you want to identify with the pure self, the transcendental self, the self that's empty, the self that is nirvana. And so you want to actually get into a state of awareness where there might not be any objects arising at all. And that's classic unmanifest absorption or nirvikalpa samadhi, which is the ultimate goal of the ascending religions, certainly the goal in Theravadan Buddhism and in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. If, on the other hand, you're sitting and you're having that experience that we discussed where you're aware of the witness right now and you're aware of all these objects that are rising moment to moment in your own awareness, and all of a sudden the sense of a witness standing back disappears and you're one with everything that's arising moment to moment, and yet there's still that sense of freedom or spaciousness that you have, that's an example of a non-dual state, a union of emptiness, or the self that was in here, with all form arising out there. And that honors both sides of the equation, because on the one hand, that experience is one with all forms that are arising, so it honors the earth, but it also rests in that empty freedom that is the transcendental witness herself, and so it honors heaven, or nirvana, or the formless. And the union of emptiness and form is called the non-dual. And even that's just sort of a little tongue-taste example of what is involved, and it really can take months and years of meditation to really stabilize that kind of awareness. The great non-dual traditions, or the tantric traditions, attempted to take consciousness, which was pure emptiness, and unite it with all form. And that means unite it with the earth, unite it with body, unite it with sexuality, unite it with gross, subtle, and causal bodies. So that orientation is an example of attempting to unite the ascending and the descending currents into a non-dual or tantric embrace. And that's generally what I also mean by ascending and descending. And what we want to do is obviously try to honor both. So descending tends to be, or descended orientation tends to be an orientation that looks at the manifest finite world that's arising moment to moment as the ultimate arena of salvation. And ascending, on the other hand, is to get out of that and to get into higher and higher and higher levels and states of consciousness until you are in pure consciousness that has no object whatsoever and is formless, unmanifest absorption, nirvikalpa or nirvana by any name. And that ascending current tries to get away from earth, away from body, away from sex, etc. The non-dual current insists that you do both, but you really do have to do both. You can't be non-dual if you just go run around and embrace senses and embrace sexuality and embrace the earth. That's paganism. That's not dual. In order to be non-dual, you have to get into the state of formlessness first. In other words, you really have to ascend, you have to transcend the entire manifest world and find that empty ground of freedom, that vast formless consciousness that is prior to manifestation. We talked about prior to the Big Bang, in that sense, prior to any manifestation at all. That realization or discovery of that formless infinite realm is a fundamental groundless ground of the non-dual approaches. You have to have that sense of freedom from all objects in order to then come back and embrace all objects in pure union. Because otherwise, if you're just stuck in the objects, then you're just addicted. Yeah, that's not non-dual. You're attached, you're addicted, you're a slave to your impulses. You're not one with heaven and earth. You're basically fixated, attached, stuck, addicted. So both of those movements are important. A true discovery of the ascending one, or the formless, unmanifest, empty realm, and then an embrace of the entire world of form as being one with that emptiness. So both ascending and descending in that sense are important.
I think the confusion that I have is understanding the stages of development in terms of this directionality, which is clearly to move upwards through the stages, right, and yet then the discussion of a descending current. And maybe I'm taking two different models and trying to overlay them on each other, which is how I'm
getting confused. In part, that's what tends to happen. And because we're discussing in a kind of an introductory level, I haven't made a lot of distinctions, but you've pointed to one that's important. We talked about different meanings of spirituality. And one is that it is indeed a stage conception. And in that view, the seven chakras, for example, are a classic stage conception, with each chakra being a higher and higher state of consciousness, a more expansive state of consciousness. In that sense, and we'll use that one for just a moment, then the ascending current is exactly that. An ascending current means you start, Kundalini starts at the base of the spine, in the material or first chakra, the root chakra, and that means it's identified with matter. And then as it awakens, though, it moves to the second chakra and third and fourth and so on. Not in a rigid sequential way, but in sort of flowing ways of expanding energy and consciousness. And that is an ascent. That is a direct ascending current. And if you just follow that current, however, then classically you remain absorbed in the Sahasrara, the seventh, the crown chakra, and you remain basically absorbed in that radiant bliss and formless release. And that is the goal of that particular path. But the non-dual traditions will sometimes rather literally say, okay, now that you've done that, now that you've found this radiant, vast, formless source of blissful luminosity and empty clarity, bring that back down into the manifest realm. In other words, inhabit these lower chakras with that infinite consciousness and light and bliss. So there are actually techniques of bringing down the light through the chakras into the body, into the earth, into sensuality and sexuality. And that's, it's kind of a mechanical view of it, but that's ascending and descending in that sense. And that is a stage-like sequence. And some of the traditions actually have stages of meditation where you first learn to withdraw senses and then you learn to re-inhabit them. So in those cases, it you can think of it really as a kind of an ascending and then a descending series of components of your own spiritual practice. In real life, they kind of generally go together because, and again, just to use a clunky view of it, let's say you really are kind of progressing through the chakras and you've sort of mastered up to the fifth chakra. What's really happening in your own body is that energies are consciously ascending up to the fifth chakra, and they're also descending from the fifth chakra down, and you can balance both of those energies. You don't have access stably to sixth and seventh level consciousness until you permanently develop into them. But ascending and descending energies and currents are happening anyway. And so, again, it's not this sort of rigid clunk, clunk, clunk type of situation. The other thing is that one of the other definitions we talked about for spirituality is it's also these ever-present states and bodies of consciousness, gross, subtle, and causal, or waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. And some spiritual traditions talk about those in an ascending and descending sense as well. And that's a little bit confusing because those really aren't kind of stages like as the chakras were. In that case, any time a subtle energy, for example, comes down into the gross realm, that's a descending movement, no matter what stage you happen to be at. And these three great states of causal, subtle, and gross are ever present. And so you can have, in those states, you can have a gross impulse go up to a subtle expansion into a causal, and vice versa. And the causal can come down into subtle, and that can come down into gross. Those are also loosely talked about in terms of ascending and descending energies. Some traditions, like Aurobindo's, a large part of the spiritual path actually starts with a descent of energies from these higher states or realms, and a descent of supermind or overmind or even any of the higher realms first come down into the body, sort of reconfigure it, and then you can begin your stage practice more effectively. So again, it's not a one-way street, and it's not a rigid set of clunky kinds of stages. But ascending and descending in general means if you have the great nest going from matter to body to mind to soul to spirit, then the ascending currents go from matter to body to mind to soul to spirit, and the descending currents go from spirit to soul to mind to body to matter. And the non-dual traditions want both of those to occur. So we don't just want to go in one direction and celebrate the end point of that. We want to basically circulate the entire life force, if you will. And there are actually exercises for that as well, breathing down the front line of the body, breathing up the spine, and so on. Nonetheless, it's still astonishing to look at the overall history of human spirituality and see the ascenders and the descenders at war. It's been like about a 3,000-year war, and they're still at each other's throats. They just are not very fond of each other. And they still define sin as what each other is doing. In today's climate, of course, we see a lot of that, in that there's an appropriate resurgence of descended, in the very positive sense, Gaia-oriented, Earth-celebrating religions for many reasons. One, there's an ecological nightmare, and we could use a little more goddess awareness. Two, most of the traditions of the West, the formal traditions, were of an ascending variety. My kingdom is not of this earth. And so we have a kind of a puritanical orientation towards spirituality, not a spirituality of celebrating the life and body and earth, but spirituality of denying, repressing, hurting life, body, and earth. And so there's kind of a rebalancing going on there. My criticism would be that sometimes the Gaia-centered spiritualities have gone too far, and they've lost the ascending and transcendental current altogether, so that there's not a real understanding of freedom and emptiness and the unborn and the formless and the unmanifest. You don't find that very much in the pagan orientations.
But what you're saying is that whatever stage of development you're at,
Yeah.
You'll be experiencing ascending currents and descending currents, no matter what stage of development you're at.
Yes, that's right. And that's sort of how, again, one of the ways that an integral theory tries to bring both states of consciousness and stages of consciousness together. And that is, if we do look very strictly at a stage conception of development, some of the developmental lines we talked about, then whatever stage you're at, you're dealing with ascending and descending currents up to that stage. And that means they're actually manifest and explicit in your own body mind. You can actually track them, you can feel them, you can see them. Now, there are higher energies and currents going on, in a sense at the higher stages, but those are not something in your own consciousness right now. You can experience them briefly as a state, but not as a permanent acquisition or stage. So even if you're at, we were talking about sort of seven general stages of development. We're using chakras as an example. If you're at your center of gravity is at mythic level 3, stage 3, you're still dealing with the currents going from 1 to 2 to 3 and from 3 to 2 to 1. Those are still circulating in your own body mind in a conscious way. You have actual control over those if you want to. You can master them, you can work with them, you can practice them. And you still have the three great states of gross, subtle, and causal available to you 24 hours a day. It's just that as you move to, as your center of gravity moves to stage 4 or level 4 and then level 5 and then level 6, you have more and more of this entire circle of ascending and descending energies and awareness available to you on a permanent conscious fashion.